This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is returning to Washington after 2 days of talks with Turkish and Saudi officials to brief President Donald Trump on what he learned about the fate of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Turkey believes he was murdered after entering the Saudi consulate in Istanbul October 2nd. Speaking with reporters en route, Pompeo said it was reasonable to give the Saudis more time to complete their investigation.
We had very direct conversations about this, the seriousness of this, how serious President Trump is taking this, how serious the United States will take this. No one should mistake that we're looking to see the results of these investigations too. And we think it's important that they get them right. And we're hopeful it'll happen quickly as well.
Mr. Trump insists he's not giving cover to the Saudis, traditional U.S. allies, but he just wants to find out what happened.
They're an ally and they're a tremendous purchaser of not only military equipment, but other things. When I went there, they committed to purchase $450 billion worth of things and $110 billion worth of military. Those are the biggest orders in the history of this country. So they're an important ally, but I want to find out what happened, where is the fault, and we will probably know that by the end of the week.
The Saudis have denied Khashoggi was murdered, but U.S. media outlets report Riyadh will acknowledge he was killed in a botched interrogation at the consulate. Security forces in the Indian Ocean archipelago of Comoros shot dead at least two protesters Wednesday and wounded several others as deadly clashes over constitutional changes continue. Protesters oppose President Azali Assoumani's plan to extend term limits, ending a tradition of rotating the presidency among the nation's three main islands. The opposition has called June's referendum illegal. This is VOA News. U.S. Syria envoy James Jeffrey said some but not all militants have withdrawn from a Russian-Turkish demilitarized zone in Idlib province. They were supposed to have left with heavy weapons by Monday. He described the current Syrian seven-year civil war as frozen. At the same time, longtime U.N. envoy Staffan de Mistura announced that for personal reasons, he's stepping down from his post at the end of November. He hopes to be able to convene a committee of experts to draft a new constitution, although the Bashar al-Assad government objects to the one-third being selected by the UN.
The government of Syria has invited me to Damascus next week. I plan to engage them on the work that has been done on the Constitutional Committee. I will, of course, be ready, if the Council so wishes, to report back to it after my visit on whether these direct consultations have produced, as we hope, the approval and agreement on a credible and inclusive third list.
Another third of that committee is to be chosen by Damascus and the final third by the opposition. The Democratic Republic of Congo has summoned the Angolan ambassador following the expulsion of tens of thousands of Congolese working in mines during a security crackdown. There are unconfirmed reports dozens were killed, a charge Luanda denies. Kinshasa has called for an investigation. A Central American caravan seeking asylum in the U.S. swelled in numbers as several thousand moved north on foot and by truck from Honduras and Guatemala toward Mexico. Among them, Daisy Turco, who said she hopes President Donald Trump will open the doors of his country for them. Mr. Trump, who has denounced weak U.S. immigration laws, warned countries like Honduras that they stand to lose vital aid if they allow the caravan to proceed north to the U.S. border. British Prime Minister Theresa May in Brussels for crucial talks on exiting from the European Union said now's the time to make a Brexit deal before Britain is scheduled to leave March 29.
There is still the question of the Northern Irish backstop, but I believe everybody around the table wants to get a deal. And by working intensively and closely, we can achieve that deal. I believe a deal is achievable, and now is the time to make it happen.
So far, negotiations on what Brexit should look like, including the future of EU-British relations, broke down Sunday, raising the specter of no deal. An Egyptian delegation met with Hamas rulers in Gaza Wednesday, trying to shore up a shaky ceasefire after a rocket fired from Gaza struck an Israeli city, prompting an airstrike. Both Hamas and Islamic Jihad issued a statement rejecting what they called irresponsible attempts to sabotage Egyptian mediation efforts. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbote in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 18th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The WHO says Ebola in the DRC is not a global health emergency.
We do have some optimism that this outbreak, just like the one in May, will be brought under control within reasonable time.
Robert Stefan is chair of a WHO Ebola Emergency Committee. The DRC government has launched a formal protest with Angola for what it calls violent expulsion of its citizens. COSATU says it will continue to press South Africa's ruling ANC to deliver on fighting corruption and services. And the World Food Programme suspends delivery of food aid to parts of South Sudan due to insecurity.
And when it's insecure and we can't send our people on the ground, because we have to send our people to organize the food distribution. So as long as those conditions are not in place, the food cannot be supplied.
Simon Beck is the WFP Deputy Country Director for South Sudan. Human rights activists call for freedom of expression guarantees ahead of Senegal's election. And U.S. pop star Kanye West's visit to Uganda is getting mixed reactions. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. An emergency committee convened by the World Health Organization has decided that the Ebola outbreak in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo does not constitute a public health emergency of international concern. The WHO says there have been 216 cases of Ebola, including 139 deaths. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The International Health Regulations Emergency Committee says it is seriously concerned by the Ebola outbreak, especially as it is occurring in an area of conflict in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. It says this poses problems for health workers to move around freely and track people infected with the virus and in need of treatment. The committee says one of the reasons it does not believe the outbreak poses a global threat is that the virus has not spread across the border into neighboring countries. Chair of the committee, Robert Stefan, says the international response to the outbreak has been very good. He says WHO and other agencies have achieved quite a lot since the outbreak was declared August 1st. In fact, he says the disease is being brought under control in one of the provinces in North Kivu.
In another province, it's just flaring up, but the concentration of the response teams is now focusing on this new area. And so we do have some optimism that this outbreak, just like the one in May, will be brought under control within reasonable time.
Stefan says the committee agrees declaring an international emergency at this time would hinder efforts to contain the Ebola virus. He says a declaration would have implications for travel and trade, making it difficult for needed experts and supplies to access the affected areas. However, as a precaution, WHO is recommending exit screenings, including at airports, ports, and land crossings. But it notes entry screenings, particularly in distant airports, would have no public health benefit and would be costly. WHO has advised DRC's 9 neighboring countries they are at high risk of spread and is supporting them with equipment and personnel. It says these preparedness activities are expensive and will require substantial financial support from the international community. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Democratic Republic of Congo's government has launched a formal protest with Angola for what the DRC calls the brutal treatment and expulsion of thousands of its citizens from Angola. Information Minister Lambert Mende says the DRC has called for the establishment of a joint committee of inquiry to know exactly what happened to the migrants. Angolan Police Commissioner Antonio Bernardo has denied any violence against the DRC migrants, and he said that the action to expel was in defense of of Angolan sovereignty. Information Minister Mendes says the expulsion is a blatant violation of a 20-year-old agreement between Angola and the DRC, which calls for both countries to consult with each other whenever one is going to expel citizens from that country.
The government met yesterday to receive a comprehensive report of what happened in Angola with these Congolese migrants. And it seems that despite the fact that some of them have came back voluntarily, others were pushed forcibly and under very brutal conditions out of the country. And while pushing them out, some were killed, others wounded, and they lost a lot of properties. And no information was given to our government to allow us to welcome them, as it is written in an agreement we have signed with Angola for 20 years now, because this agreement was signed in 1999. It is said that the two countries must refer one to another when they have to expel irregular migrants so that the other country can arrange to welcome its citizens. So this was not done. And the brutality of this police force who harmed our citizens brought the government to issue formal protest and to ask our counterpart of Angola for a joint inquiry committee to know what happened to those people who lost their lives during that operation.
Mr. Minister, it seems to me your country was unprepared for this large number of people coming back from Angola.
We are not informed, you know. To be prepared, you have to be informed that your citizens are being expelled from the other country. So if somebody can just rush, take people and throw them out, how can you be prepared? Even God cannot do that. So now we have decided in a very urgent situation to found our four provinces where they are found, to give them funds from the humanitarian special funds. We have secured some months ago for other purpose to help them to allow our citizens to cater for themselves and to go back to their village.
You mentioned, Mr. Minister, brutality by the Angolan police. The Angolan police commissioner, Antonio Bernardo, saying that this is not true, that, first of all, Angola is a sovereign country, and that some of your citizens that are in Angola, there's a border agreement that they can only stay in for 48 hours.
Nobody is denying the sovereignty of Angola. They are a sovereign country, as Congo is. Still, we have agreement between Angola and Congo. When you have to expel citizens of the other country, you are a sovereign country, you have to respect your signature. So an agreement was made in 1999. They have to respect their commitment. That is what we are asking.
The commissioner said that Angola is protecting its natural resources. The allegation here is that some of the Congolese were engaged in illegal mining.
We do not deny them the right to push them out because they were irregular migrants. That is their right. But let it be done under good conditions. Let it be done legally.
Lambert Mendes, Democratic Republic of Congo's Information Minister. You're speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 18th. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. The UN World Food Programme has suspended the delivery of food aid to some parts of South Sudan due to insecurity. A WFP official in South Sudan says the decision will affect 60,000 needy families. Wake Simon Wudu has more from Juba.
Simon Kamel Beck, the WFP Deputy Country Director in South Sudan, says the areas cut off in Kolotolier, Dabloal, and Mayendit, places that have been hardest hit by the nearly 5 years of fighting. In recent months, government and anti-opposition forces have repeatedly clashed in Lier. Both sides deny responsibility for starting the clashes, according to local officials. In an exclusive interview with this program, Kamel Beck says it's nearly impossible for aid agencies to access the areas due to rampant insecurity.
When it's insecure, we can't send our people on the ground because we have to send our people to organize the food distribution. So as long as those conditions are not in place, the food cannot be supplied.
Last year, government and aid agencies declared famine in Lier and Mayendit. A majority of the residents in these cut-off areas are internally displaced after they fled their villages to escape fighting between government and rebel forces. In the absence of food aid, the IDPs often resort to eating wild animals and fruits. Kamel Beck says the situation places already vulnerable people into more trouble.
If you look at the IPC classification, one of the key factors in that classification is an unrestricted access to relief, to humanitarian support. So if that is not granted or we are not able to deliver on that, then very quickly those people will get into a very serious situation.
According to recently released food security reports by government and UN agencies, 6.1 million people across the country are food insecure as a result of protracted conflict, disruption of livelihood, and poor economic conditions. Onyote Adigo, South Sudan's agriculture and food security minister, describes the reports of fighting in the food insecure areas as unfortunate.
Recently, the two chiefs of defense forces from the IO and that of the government, they had a very cordial meeting in Khartoum where they promised to work together to identify problems.
Chapter 3 of the Revitalized Peace Agreement stipulates that during the pre-transitional period and throughout the transition, the parties shall create an enabling political, administrative, operational, and legal environment for the delivery of humanitarian assistance and protection. It also says the warring parties must secure access to civilian populations in need of emergency humanitarian assistance. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The Congress of South African Trade Unions, COSATU, says it will continue to press South Africa's ruling African National Congress, ANC, party to make good on its promise to fight corruption and deliver services. COSATU Secretary General Bheki Unshalintshali says even though COSATU is in an alliance with the ANC, its members will not cast their votes blindly for the ANC. He made the comments in reaction to a new data analysis by the organization Municipal IQ, which shows that riots in South Africa over poor government services and poverty hit a record high in 2018. Unshalintshali says although he has not seen the report, the conclusion made may be influenced by the public perception that public funds that are supposed to help the poor are being taken by corrupt politicians.
Let me just first indicate that I have not seen the report to look at it in detail. But it's true, and it's a general every day and every news you hear about the protest, about the people's anger on service delivery. It's influenced by a number of issues. Firstly, it is influenced by the perception that councillors and politicians are corrupt. It is also influenced by what people are hearing through the Commission of Inquiry on the state capture and corruption, how people have been looting the state coffers. As a result, it affects the communities and it raises their angers. But it also influenced by the Auditor General's report in terms of funds that have disappeared that were supposed to address the plight of the poor community that has ended up unaccounted for. As a result, then it urged the community that for them to be heard, they have to go to the streets and be able to protest. As we know, that most of these protests are not peaceful.
We know that President Cyril Ramaphosa has promised to improve governance. Some of the protests, according to this report, is that South Africans are demanding things like housing, running water, paved roads, and other that many people in the poor black communities still do not have. This analysis is coming as South Africa is preparing for elections. I know that COSATU is perhaps a partner of the ruling ANC. How much impact are you having in terms of getting the ANC to meet the demands of the working poor of South Africa?
We do as much as we could in relation to those demands. That's why when we come to the election, we're not giving the ANC a blank check. We put our demands too as part of the working class, but also as part of the communities, because our members are part of the community that will only vote for a party that will have to deliver. So we're involved in the manifesto. We're coming from our National Congress. We've indicated that the first thing for us that the ANC must do to earn the respect of our people is a question of restoring our economy by creating jobs. We're always putting those demands and say to the ANC, if you have to get and earn the respect of people dealing with those issues, the question of corruption is high on the demands of our people and the question of service delivery. So we're in an alliance with the ANC, but where there's a need for us to go out and protest even against the ANC, because while we're in an alliance, but we're an independent organization.
Biki Unshalinshale is the General Secretary of the Congress of South African Trade Unions, COSATU. He was speaking with me from Johannesburg. As next year's elections loom in Senegal, human rights activists are decrying what they say is the current administration's failure to secure proper freedom of expression and peaceful assembly. Despite repeated promises to improve press freedom and remove a law that can be used to clamp down on opposition protests, Macky Sall's presidency has failed to alleviate these issues. Françoise Patouel, West Africa researcher for Amnesty International, tells Ricky Shryak how current laws are failing Senegal's public.
Our assessment is that actually a lot of those promises haven't been fulfilled. There are still issues with the right to peaceful assembly. A lot of assemblies, particularly when they are political in nature or when they're organized by critical groups, are banned. The authorities have used what's known as the Ousmane Gom decree, which is a decree issued by the then Minister of Interior, Ousmane Gom, in 2011 that banned protests in certain areas of the city center of Dakar. And this means that people cannot protest, even peacefully, and the authorities don't hesitate to use force, you know, to enforce the ban. And people have been wounded and killed over the last few years during these protests. One of them, recently in San Luis, for instance, during a protest in San Luis, a student was shot dead during a protest where they were simply asking for access to the university restaurant.
And what was the reason the government gave for this ban in 2011? Because Senegal has historically been a place where people protested, where people were able to peacefully assemble and let their concerns be known by the government.
But it's always very vague grounds. It's things like the demonstration may be breaching public security, that it may... that it may breach the circulation of goods and people. So it's very vague grounds that can be used very arbitrarily. There are a lot of protests that are authorized. However, when the protests tend to be critical or political in their nature, they can often be banned.
There's a press offenses provision in the Senegalese law that allows people to be arrested for press offenses. Now, Amnesty says that Senegal has promised in the past to change that, and yet they have not. Is that correct?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Senegal had made a lot of promises to ensure that there would be a better protection of the right to freedom of expression. And yet, over the last few years, we've seen that they've adopted laws that actually, strengthen their framework in order to repress dissent. One of these laws is a revision of the Criminal Code and Criminal Procedure Code, which, for instance, legalizes hacking for judiciary purposes. So someone can hack your computer with the simple, request from a prosecutor. Someone can hack a computer and install software on your computer remotely, supposedly for judiciary purposes. If it's within an investigation, that should be, and this was under judicial control, this would be okay. But the prosecutor is not independent.
That was Francois Patouel, West Africa researcher for Amnesty International. He was speaking to Ricky Shryak from Dakar, Senegal. The current visit to Uganda of U.S. pop star Kanye West and his wife Kim Kardashian continues to receive mixed reactions. The couple has met with Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni, and officials say the visit will help promote Ugandan tourism. But parliamentarian Robert Chakulai, popularly known as Bobby Wine, has described the visit as immoral. He accused Kanye West of using his influence to associate with a president who Bobby Wine says restricts freedoms and tortures opposition politicians. Alex Atuhari is publisher and editorial director of an online Ugandan publication.
Kanye West and his wife Kim Kardashian, of course, they are stars in the arts industry, and they are followed by Uganda's mostly youth population. So it was on the whole a very, very positive reception. Everybody was sharing their pictures at the Chobe Safari Lodge in the Murchison Falls National Park in the north of the country on social media. So it created a positive vibe both locally here and, I believe, international. Of course, then they were later hosted by the president at his official residence. And then at that point, it had to draw our own local political issues. And then all kinds of comments started coming in, both positive and negative.
Yes, that's so, because I'm reading some of the articles from Uganda. Someone commenting that perhaps Kanye West and his wife may be in Uganda with no awareness of the political situation. Now, Bobby Wine, himself a musician, commented that the visit of Kanye West was immoral for West to rub shoulders with President Museveni.
Yeah, of course, you know, we have our own local political contest. As you know, we are a political dispensation that has seen a presidency that has been in place for very many years. And putting that in the context that Uganda's youth population, dominant youth population, you know, almost 80% of the population in Uganda is under 30. Now, this is a guy they follow and admire, and being hosted by a politician many love to hate. So, I mean, they find themselves in a catch-22.
As I was saying, the President Museveni has touted this visit as a boost to Ugandan tourism. How do people see it there? Do they think that this might help boost Uganda's tourism?
Honestly, in my view, I think most people know that this would be a boost to the country's tourism, because undoubtedly Kanye West and his wife, Kim Kardashian, of the famous Kardashians, they are very, very international icons. And they had all this positive reportage about the country. And, you know, some of the issues that we have here, especially job creation, and what if the country was focused on investing and boosting sectors like tourism and agriculture, that would be the sure way of answering some of the issues, especially to do with the challenges facing the youth population. But again, as I told you, we cannot run away from our local politics, polarized because of our background and history.
Alex Atuhari is publisher and editorial director of an online Ugandan publication. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. And that is it for this Thursday, October 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.